Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 269. What was your 269 song a second ago?
Nerdist Podcast number 269.
Okay, that was just attitude-y. That wasn't singing.
I didn't have a song. It was just...
No, you can't do that bit.
Why? Is that copywritten?
Well, it is. That's my friend Jordan Brady's bit.
What, Bow Chicka Bow Wow?
Yeah, that was a stand-up bit that he did in the 80s.
You can't claim porn music.
No, but he owns that bit, so whenever someone does that Bow Chicka Bow Wow thing, they should fucking send Jordan Brady a check, because that was directly stolen from his act.
All right, well, let me get my checkbook out.
While Chloe's getting her checkbook, I will talk about how today was preview day at New York Comic Con, and it was awesome. So many great vendors, so many great booths. If you listen to this before the 12th or 13th of October, then you should definitely try to check out New York Comic Con if you can. We're doing our podcast tonight at the Best Buy Theater. Guillermo del Toro is our guest, along with Joel Hodgson. And we're going to have Tig on the show, but then I realized that I think it would be better. I really want to sit down with Tig one-on-one and have a chat with her, because she's come through some really seriously fucked up stuff, and she's come out on top of it, and I kind of want to give... I just want to give that podcast the weight and the sensitivity that it deserves. So we're gonna have Tig on in a one-on-one. And I also would like to mention that this weekend, The Walking Dead comes back, which means The Talking Dead comes back. There's so much fucking sweet zombie action in the first episode, and that's all I'm going to say about it. But it is very satisfying in an amazing way. And so the guest today is Lauren Cohan, who plays Maggie, and she's delightful. She was on our bowling show. We bowled against the Walking Dead cast, her and Scott Wilson and Steve Yeun and Robert Kirkman, and I really dig Lauren Cohan a lot. She's super fun and funny, and but fucking great on the show. So this was a fun, delightful conversational romp, if you will. Why am I doing that? Why are you covering your eyes?
No reason.
Why are you covering your face? Like, why are you making that?
Let me browse Reddit. I want to browse Reddit.
Were you making that face at me because I said conversational romp, or was it something that you saw on Reddit?
No, it was like a delightful conversational romp.
That is, wow, you've really nailed me.
Yeah.
You've really.
Yes, I have.
Bow chicka bow bow. Oh, fuck, I gotta write a check.
We're gonna be so poor.
Just like America.
Oh, God. What?
That's why the economy went broke. Because so many people said bow chicka bow bow, and then America, that caused the financial crisis.
Who's your friend's name?
Jordan Brady.
Jordan Brady is the 1%.
He is now. Yeah. He wasn't before the financial crisis, where all the banks had to write checks as royalties for doing bow chicka bow bow. Now the Nerdist Podcast is number 269 with Lauren Cohan.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We should talk like this the entire time.
This is so cool. This is like.
Isn't this sort of like a radio studio?
It's like a radio studio.
So you play Maggie on The Walking Dead?
I do.
How's that like?
It's so good.
Hey, it was good. It's awesome to see you. Last night the premiere was so much fun.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was scary. That maze was like.
The maze was scary. Well, and the show, too. So, your job is basically a horror maze.
It was so funny. We were walking through there, and I was like, I can't remember who was saying it. Maybe it was Steven. He was like, this is our life. This is our life. And there was just people. My favorite part was the zombie. Just as you enter this maze where you're actually just peeling back the flesh, and he was shoving intestines into his
just mouth. Eating yeah just Jeez. Eating people intestines, but there were some really great there were I think the bicycle girl was in there,
yeah,
and then I think the well walker was in there too, like half the bloated zombie.
Yeah, and they all look like dummies, and then they sort of come to life, which was really surprising.
It makes me mad, because every time you think, like, okay, I know, I see where the zombie's going to come out, like, just out of the corner, you're like, God damn it! And then they get you.
You know, the funniest bit was, like, so I do this for a living, obviously, but my approach to the zombies that surprised me, you're not going to see this on the radio, but we might, you know, was that, ha! It was the girliest little, you know, slap on the head. It was really.
So that's how Lauren deals with zombies. Maggie stabs him in the face with a sharp pipe.
And really gets the thrill out of doing
it. But Lauren is more like, ha, and just tries to smack. It's like a face high five, what you were doing.
It was a face high five. It was like the jackknife of the hand. Yeah.
Hi-ya! Zombies don't respond to hi-ya, by the way. They're going to come at you anyway. But it was really cool. The most fun thing about it is that afterwards there was a camera crew there, and I came out and they were like, "What did you think of the maze?" And I was like, "Oh, it was really awesome. There are all these zombies." And they were like, "What did you think about the tank?" Like, they were so focused on the tank. Like, yeah, no, the tank was cool.
Yeah.
But there were zombies eating people. Like, that part was really awesome, too.
Really awesome. I was wondering if they have the same guys in there, you know, for a few hours a night, because they must actually get hit. I mean, they must actually get sort of like...
They do.
Yeah.
My friend of mine designed a couple horror mazes for Universal, and years ago we would go, when he first started doing this in the, 2000, 2001, we'd get all dressed up and go into the mazes and jump out and scare people. And his brother got punched in the face. Just like one big guy was like, smack, and just hit him. So it happens.
Yeah, yeah. They have a very good sort of springy response. They kind of get just close enough and then get back for...
One kind of nerdy complaint about the maze.
Okay.
A zombie came out of the wall wielding an axe. Now...
I noticed him.
They're not... I mean, you know, unless he died with an axe in his hand and rigor mortis set in to grip the axe, then maybe I'm on board. But he's still not lifting and trying to hit you with it. Then it's really just like an appendage.
Yeah, that zombie was very menacing and very sort of like controlled.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't your typical zombie. I think he was a human dressed as a zombie to protect himself.
What? Mm. And so that's why he didn't actually try to hit us with the axe, because he was like, "Don't worry, guys, I'm one of you."
Yeah, I'm an actor. I'm just fooling these zombies.
Do you know how hard it is to get work in the apocalypse? I'll take any job I can.
My favorite guy was the one that was laying down having his guts eaten, and it was the last tour of the night, and he was like, he's supposed to be very reaching for help, and it was the most lackluster reach for help I think I've ever seen.
He was tweeting in one hand, dying, # zombie. How has the, I don't know how you guys, by the way, do, I mean, you know, it's obviously not, you're obviously not shipbuilding, so I think anyone with like a, you know, who's like, "What are you talking about? I have to go down and I have to mine copper." Okay, fine. It is a physically and emotionally demanding job that you guys have, like, you know, probably like 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And we have like, whenever we're not having some kind of emotional intensity, there's a very, very hardcore physical intensity to the show. And it's so funny because the last few episodes I've had have been more of a character, sort of some heart-wrenching character work. And I watched the premiere last night and I was like, "Oh my God, I just want to slash stuff."
Did you not watch the whole episode?
I did. I kind of peeked in actually for part of it and stuff. But Danai and I were on the side and sort of, you know, not quite ready to sit and watch it with everybody that we know. It can sometimes be a bit scary.
Well, especially for Danai, who this is her first season on the show.
Yeah.
Danai Gurira. Gurira.
Mm-hmm.
She taught me how to say it. She was like, double roll the R. Du Gurira. I still don't think I said it right, but...
When Danai gets excited about something, she gets very Zimbabwe. She gets very... her accent becomes very Zimbabwean when she's passionate. It's really great.
She's great. She's really great on the show, too. And I think people are, you know, I think people are going to be so... There's so much I want to talk about, but obviously I can't.
Mm.
Just to say that the first episode is... well, you know what? Maybe this will go up by the time... No, this will go up by the time the first episode airs. Still... It's still too soon. No spoilers. Just fucking watch it, people. It's amazing. Did you, because you guys spent a lot of time on the farm last season.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people were like, how come they won't get off that farm?
I know.
And then like halfway through that second season, like shit got crazy. And it just starts there in season three and just goes.
Yeah. Season three, it tops the finale of season two and it maintains it and ascends it. It's really, really incredible. Every script we've had, for at least, I'd say the first seven or eight scripts, we were completely shocked with how this was going to actually be possible, because it was just emotional intensity, physical intensity. Some of the hours of stuff, some of the episodes, I think, are some of the most shocking stuff there's ever been. You don't know anything about what's coming, do you?
No, I don't let them tell me.
Yeah.
They offer me the episodes and I say, no, I'm going to watch along with the series.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably more exciting that way. And you get the sort of the universal suspense.
I'm nerd torn about it because a lot of people in my situation would be like, I'm going to fucking watch every one of them. But then I think other people, some of us, I'm starting to really appreciate this idea of not binge consuming things and really trying to take a journey with the show to sort of, you know, it's almost like emotional foreplay,
yeah.
You know, of like not just like, I'll watch them all at once, of just week to week, like, oh, I get to look forward to next week. I get to think about it during the week. I get to talk about it with my friends and then be, you know, surprised in a week.
Yeah, like saving your pocket money and buying something better than just candy every day.
Okay, so I went with the sexual metaphor and you went with candy. That's
Same
fine.
Thing.
That's why do I feel like that's always happening with me in life?
You want to play a game?
Sure.
Okay, when you think of animals and you think of yourself, what's the animal that's most like you?
A river otter.
Okay, and what's your favorite animal that's domestic?
Like a pet?
Yeah.
Like a pet? Like a specific breed or just animal?
No, any kind of domestic animal that you kind of like the most.
Oh, dog.
Okay, why?
I don't know, because they're like your buddy. You know, like a dog, you just, I don't know, that you just... Some people are cat people, mm-hmm. but I just feel like with a dog, I have just found that it's, I connect better with a dog than with a cat, where I just feel like half the time, I feel like half the time I'm trying to impress the cat into liking me and they just don't give a shit until they feel like giving a shit. So I guess I'm kind of like, well, fuck you cats. You know, these dogs are much more into it.
Yeah. Cats are kind of on their own schedule. They won't be bent.
No.
Thing. Yeah. What's the next one? Oh, what's your favorite food?
What's my favorite food? Shit. I guess it's got to be pizza.
Pizza?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It's saucy and but not in a sexy way. It's literally saucy. I like red sauce. I like cheese. I like bread. You know, I just like pizza. I like how many different ways people can interpret pizza. You know, I like your Chicago pizza. I like your New York pizza. I like your thin pizza. I like your barbecue chicken pizza. It's just a pizza is a blank canvas that you can make, you know, into any kind of food thing.
That is such a great answer. And lastly, what's your favorite, when you walk into a room, mm-hmm. you open the door in an empty room, what's the first thing that you see? Or what would you imagine in an empty room?
What's the first thing I see in an empty room?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing that popped into my head was a single chair sitting by a fireplace.
Oh.
And then an exit. I always look for exits in case shit goes down. I'm not even kidding. I'm like, okay, that would be the way you get out.
Okay.
Or I also go into rooms and I figure out where you'd put the stage where you could have your stand-up show.
Oh.
Because when you come up performing the way I did, which is, I didn't come up through traditional comedy clubs. It was like, you know, bars and restaurants or laundromats or like anywhere. I go into a room and I scan it really quickly and I'm like, here's a configuration you'd have to create to make this room work for a comedy show.
That is so funny. That's when I go into a room, I always think about how would you make this room, like, you know, for dinner? Or how would you actually, like, yeah, do some kind of performance in the room and have it be like a lounge or something? But this is a great game, and this is going to be a good surprise because it's basically how you see. So the otter is how you see yourself.
Okay.
And sorry. The dog is how you see yourself. The otter is how you think people see you, which is really sweet to me because I don't know if you ever saw that YouTube video of the otters that are at the zoo and they're like cuddling with each other.
Oh yeah. It's just a pile of adorableness.
Yeah. A pile of adorableness. And the food is how you see sex. So
I just love to fuck a good pizza.
Yeah.
just a good Chicago deep dish pizza. I like to get into a delicious pie.
Yeah.
What is
the room is how you see marriage, which is a cozy chair by a fireplace with
really
with a stage to entertain. So I think that's really kind of cool.
Really crazy.
Yeah, isn't that madness?
I don't know if I am perceived as a river otter though. I don't know if that's my perception. I mean, if that's other perception other people have of me. Oh God.
No, but
I feel so exposed.
The dog is how you really see. I know, but it's good. Everybody's just so embarrassed. Like we did them at work, and they were like, some people sort of say the funny. What was the one? I'll tell you mine.
Yeah.
Okay, so my first one was a dog, and it was for much the same. I said a dog will come with you anywhere if it's fun.
Yeah.
And my second one was a leopard, because leopards are. They're kind of cute, but they're also really fast.
Of course.
I don't know what that is. And they can be fierce if they need to.
Yep.
And my food was a pineapple, because they're prickly on the outside, but once you take off the skin, they're really sweet, which I thought was very illuminating.
Well, interesting.
And then I don't remember my fourth one.
The room?
I think it was a table.
What does that mean for marriage?
I don't know. Maybe like a lot of people or something.
So you're married to a lot of people. You're in a plural marriage.
Or I have a lot of people involved as well as, you know, kids or something like this.
Let's see. Dog, pizza. Interesting. That's really interesting.
But it's what you said about the pizza. That pizza's like, you know, can be enjoyed in a lot of different ways.
Oh. So was that an accidentally sexy answer?
Yeah. I thought it was a really sexy answer.
Wow. That's awesome. Do I see myself as a dog? I just love, you know, maybe that's true because dogs, you know, I think that is true because dogs are always trying to please, like they're always trying to make you happy. Yeah. And they're always like.
No, it's amazing. Like, you just said you like dogs because they're your buddy and they're fun and they're not sneaky like cats, basically. And that's exactly what you are.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, I like this game. Does this game have a name?
The four question game. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. It's good. Now you guys want to play? Later.
All right. I can't imagine what Kyle would. All right. Just lean into the microphone quickly. Kyle Clark, ladies and gentlemen.
The only one that upset me was when they said, imagine the room, and I saw like a big haunted room from The Shining with just like done over chairs with blankets on them and stuff. And I'm like, oh no.
And twins coming out of an elevator and blood pouring in.
Or you're just going to have an eyes wide shut kind of a relationship.
It's dark and scary.
Yes.
God.
It may be really intriguing.
Where did you get this game?
My friend did it to me. My friend in Ireland actually just called me with it. She said it's, I don't know. I don't know where she got it from, but I'm sure it's going to become a thing. Now you can't tell people you can't really do it with one person in front of somebody else if you want to.
Because then they think they're too much in their head about it. It has to sort of just be a very subconscious expression.
But I think dog is the nicest thing. I mean, dogs are just loyal and fun.
Oh my God. What if I had said like, monitor lizard, like just like some sort of like.
To be fair, I only asked you this because I knew you'd have good answers. I wouldn't.
Oh, you did.
I wouldn't
okay.
have gotten. I wouldn't.
Have you gotten bad answers from anyone?
Somebody said something really, really funny. I'm not going to say who it was, but they said on the third one. So they said dog, and then lion, and then they said cake because. It represents family gatherings. And that was the sex one. And so that one kind of freaked me out slightly. I didn't look at them quite the same. Or you share it with your family. You share it with your whole family. It was something everybody kind of went,
what?
I mean, nobody else knew the game.
You know when you have a nice, delicious cake right before you fuck your sister? Right. Well, this is all just subconscious thoughts bubbling up.
A sister cake,
yeah.
Now I'm trying to piece
Which
together
is
who it
very
is.
Very different than a cousin Twinkie.
All right, that was good. I'll give you that. Who was it? Was it someone in the cast?
No, it wasn't someone in the cast. Although, if I could remember now, Emily's was a monkey. Her animal that she her animal in the wild was a little monkey because they she's just the cutest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Sure,
so she was like, you know, they swing from trees. But what was nice about it is that her and her boyfriend actually had the same animal in the wild. They both thought they were little monkeys.
Aww,
I know. That's adorable.
I see. I feel like Drew Carey just tweeted a picture that I feel like accurately represents how I see myself. And it was a picture of his dog looking up at the camera with the most shamed look on its face with his lipstick just fully out. Like, the dog was just so, like, it was just like, please don't look at me. Like, it was such a, I know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's biology. I can't hide it.
I wish I could. Now I want to pull up this picture. It was so fantastic. Of
the first time I saw my dad, so my dad has a couple of Labradors, and when I was a kid, I went over there, and I remember going outside, and the one lab was outside, and I was like, "Dad, Dad, he's having a baby!" And he was like, "Who is?" I'm like, "Bubba, he's having a baby!"
Well, that's great for the dog if you thought it was a baby.
He's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I can't get the network to pull out the picture. As soon as this loads up, I'm going to show you this picture, and it's gonna alter your life. How long are you in Los Angeles for? Do you have to go back to Atlanta?
Yeah, I'm going back tomorrow, so just a few days.
Have you had a nice couple days off?
It's been really good, actually. My dad and my stepmom came over from Arizona, like, kind of last minute to enjoy the premiere and everything with me, and that was good. It's been packed, but it's been exhilarating too. I got to just sort of, you know, see some friends, do some Korean barbecue and karaoke, and then go and, you know, talk about the show.
I know it's been nonstop, like the junket stuff, because we kind of snuck some stuff in too, like with the junket. Hang on.
Oh my god. Oh my god, that actually doesn't look real. This dog looks so sorry.
Oh, so my god, if anyone listening wants to see it, if you go to Drew's Twitter handle is Drew from TV, and you just go and it just says picture of my dog NSFW, and it's just the most ashamed look you could see on a dog's face because it is way out.
You know what's actually really disturbing too is I'm holding this picture looking at this dog and your phone starts vibrating. Oh my god.
Here, if you wanted to see that, Erica, that's what that looks like. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I know. What's his name? We don't know.
I don't know what his dog, I guess his dog's name is Red Rocket, because that is way out. Way, way, way out.
Oh my god.
Please, somebody help me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was about to ask you about your parents, and it just feels not right.
Oh, yeah, this is so
God damn it. I almost met your parents last night, and then there was just such a melee of people coming out at the after party that you could never talk to someone for more than a minute.
Yeah, we kind of had this cacophony inside the room and a lot of zombies, and then there's a bit of a bottleneck right there by the exit, wasn't it? But it kind of...
I always feel a little bad for the... like the people who, because it was at Universal and so people were dressed up as zombies and they were, you know, just in the party kind of coming up and being like, ah. And then you feel this responsibility to be like, oh, you got me, you know, because it's like you want to like, okay, you're doing your job. But then sometimes you're just tired and you're like, hey. And then I feel like a dick in those times. You're like, oh, I'm not, I should be playing into this more and I'm not.
You should just turn around and scare him back. You're engaging.
Just pull out a gun and be like, I will fucking really kill you. And then just see what happens.
Yeah, watch them crap themselves.
That would be the most inopportune time for a zombie apocalypse to break out is during a zombie-themed party. Because how do you know?
Yeah. You just kind of have a code red. You're like, are you jobbing or are you...
Hello?
Hello.
You get this?
Or yeah.
So really quickly, does Maggie die this season? Okay, yeah. Don't answer that.
That's what I would say if she did.
That's true. Do you get scripts? Do they give you scripts in advance? Do you see?
Yeah, we get scripts. The top of the season, we got them a lot more in advance. Now I know we're sort of, you know, our whole team is polishing stuff and then breaking scripts. So it's been good. We're on tenterhooks for the last two episodes. That's where we have absolutely no idea what's coming. We don't know if it's going to be something like the premiere where it was guts and glory, or we don't know if it's going to be a, you know, kind of a sinister philosophical, and who knows? Who knows what kind of end we have? But yeah, we get the scripts in advance and we get the call. We get, you know, the phone call. It's really funny because Glenn Mazzara, we have, you know, he has an open door policy, so we get a lot of phone calls back and forth about script and everything. But every time he calls one of us, the first thing he says is, everything's okay.
That's a good, responsible EP.
It's so nice. Yeah, it's good. And the first couple times he did it, I was like, I already knew everything was going to be fine because it was episode one.
Right.
So he says it, I'm like, oh. And then you start actually worrying because he makes you, you know.
Right. Sort of,
But
everything's gonna be fine. I mean, with the show, you're gonna die, but everything's gonna be fine. The show will be fine. Yeah. Don't worry.
My new puppy's doing great at home.
Don't you worry about us. We're gonna be great.
Yeah, just got a chicken salad. You know, it's great. yeah, so it's really good, and it's a really good year for Maggie. It's like it's cool. I got to sort of be introduced to this group last year, and now we have like insanity. This. Sad, scary, exciting. You can't really put these things into words. You just have to watch it.
And there are times, though, like if there's a bunch of zombie killing and then I see you and Glenn kind of nuzzle up together, like, it, you know, in real life, I'm like, don't get blood in her eyes. Like, it's going to spread. Like, I get all excited about it.
Yeah, I know. It was funny because you get these little things. I loved when you saw Michonne sort of take these zombies out. They're coming so close and it's like, the potential of a scratch and all this thing, and but I loved that moment when in this first episode where he's checking for scratches, and that's what you.
It's so sweet.
Yeah.
Do you think? Here's an interesting question. Do you think in a zombie apocalypse you would be more? Would you have more sex, or you'd just be too emotionally exhausted? Like, in other words, would you be seeking relief by having sex, or would you be like, I cannot have sex. We're gonna fucking die. Like. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been through both halves of that question, but that didn't make any sense. You know, what I mean? The question and the answer part.
So which half?
The half I'll give you now part. Is half B.
Okay.
But I think what's really funny when I was talking to Nicole, who's one of our writers, Nicole Beattie, about this, and she's like, you know what? I'm always campaigning to get more sex in the show. It's the apocalypse. Come on.
Right.
And I kind of feel like there's so much that we can't control as characters in this show. First of all, there's a lot of waiting around and there's a lot of sort of, you know, times when you can't really do anything. But secondly, I think sex sometimes is something that you can actually control when you're in this otherwise really sort of not very predictable environment.
It's just like a pizza. You can control a pizza.
You can control a pizza. Yeah. And I just think, I don't know, you've got your adrenaline pumping and so I think everybody's probably, you know, hot under the collar.
Maybe a little bit.
That's how Maggie feels. No.
Yeah, seriously, because Maggie pounced on Glenn. Like pretty hardcore. Like, fuck it, let's just, come on.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
It's funny in reflection because Maggie is actually a really pretty good girl, and that introduction to their love life to me was cool because it was like, it was her way of sort of proving to him that she wasn't afraid. I think.
Right.
When I reflect on it, you know, it's like, no, I can, you know, people talk about like cigarettes, like, no, you know, I can smoke five in a row. I smoke five one time.
And it's kind of but I also think there's something about the idea that, you know, up until this apocalypse, the character of Maggie is probably like, you know, she's, you know, it's not a prude, but, you know, like, you know, nice farmer's daughter, probably going to meet a guy, get married, like, have this life. And then all of a sudden the world goes to shit and it's like, oh, well, I guess those rules don't really apply anymore. So maybe this is just her way of like kind of hitting, like you said, just sort of like bursting into this new world.
Yeah, definitely. And I think she's also like, you know, they've been on this farm in isolation for a while. And it's not necessarily in a sexual tone, but they've, you know, she's been looking to connect with someone. And I think that's why when the group comes, it's actually, you know, not her relationship with Glenn alone. This whole situation when the group comes is her chance to sort of ironically enter into, you know, life. And and so and Glenn, I just think they have that kind of immediate connection. And and so he has this, you know.
You can tell Glenn this. I think if Maggie were really unafraid, there she'd have a threesome. I'm just saying I mean, really, guys, it's just a way to prove that these characters aren't afraid. That's the worst one.
Yeah, and all those were from Brooklyn.
I know. I can't imitate.
Yeah. No, but it was great.
But I love the prison set looks so good on film, and it looks amazing in person. When I got to see it in person, but it just looks great. They did such a good job.
It's eerie and kind of very. It's very kind of claustrophobic. For us, it feels very safe. And when I saw it on film, it read as sort of this very kind of claustrophobic security, I guess. But it's amazing. Grace Walker, ironically enough, is his last name. He designed our set. And it's just like, that was our studio turned into a prison. You know, they sort of, they emmed and awed about what we were going to do and where we were going to set season three, and then sort of, I guess, looked around them and thought, let's turn this into a prison. So this is our stages in our studio that are now, you know, in 3 months transformed. But it's nice. It's nice to be inside. Some of our some of last year was made easier by the heat, because it really grounds you and it drains you and makes you feel like it's the end of the world and you're going to die.
yeah, Atlanta's fucking brutal in the summer.
It really is.
And it's you're like, running around like swinging pipes at people. I should just sit down. Like, you don't just going outside is a Herculean effort.
It is. It really is. And you're just kind of you're out there trying to remember your lines and, you know, be good, whatever that is. But the prison is great because we're still out on location a lot. We do still a lot of like road trips and side trips and errands and kind of stuff like this. But we really, I think, earned this like occasional indoor stuff. So it's like, it's cool. But the prison is awesome. I don't even know what to say. It all reads visually. It's not a lot I can say about it.
Well, let's talk. You've been talking about Walking Dead a lot the last couple of days. So let's talk about you.
Oh, okay.
Let's just talk about you for a sec. You have a very interesting background, which is that I always forget you're Australian, but English. You were born in Australia, but grew up in England?
America. Born in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and then grew up in England, and then was back here for a while and stuff. But my family is everywhere. My family's in Greece and Spain. And
so there's no Australian component.
No, there's no, but it's really funny.
I was way off.
No, it's good. It's good. Everybody kind of assumes that I am Australian because my accent will kind of, I guess when you combine Cherry Hill and London, you get Australia. That's a note to all dialect coaches everywhere.
That's good.
South Africa sometimes.
But I think it's also that you have such an outgoing energy that kind of feels like fun and Australian in a way. And I think maybe that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just sort of a sunny. I get that. I love Aussies. You just kind of you feel like you've known them when you first meet them.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
But England is, England. Great people. A little button up sometimes.
A little button up sometimes. But what I love about England is it's button up, but it's really not. You just have to, it's once you get to know people that you just sort of, you realize the English are very frank. They're very frank and they're very dry. So it's just kind of a sense of humor you have to sort of get to know. And then once you do, it's just under the surface.
So what is your citizenship? You're American citizen, but do you have English citizenship as well?
Yeah, I have both. I have both, which is really lucky. And so I've been able to kind of not have to decide where to live, really, and just to be over here. I love it. The great thing about England is and LA, and I guess I just have sort of a gypsiness in my blood because I was born here, moved there, and it's been in our family. But I don't like to stay in any one place for too long. So I do. I like the exit door as well.
oh, shit. You know. Did I say the exit door for the marriage thing?
No.
Oh, shit. I did. I did say exit door for marriage.
No, but the last thing you said was the stage, which I think meant that you wanted to keep the marriage going.
You're being very kind. I clearly said I was looking for a way out. I said, you know, I wanted to be nice and cozy, but I got to fucking get out of here at a moment's notice. Oh, my God.
But it was bookended by really positive, cozy things.
All right. Well, this is nice. I mean, I think a much colder person who was administering this test would have been like, you have some commitment. You have some pride, which is funny because I am kind of I'm really sort of a monogamist. I just tend to, you know, like, I don't know. I'm not really a big, like, I'm going to go out and date a bunch of people. Yeah. It's not really that way.
Aren't we all just comfortable to know that there is a way out? I really feel like when you're in a relationship and you feel a freedom and nobody's too possessive of each other, that's when you really commit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, relationships I've been in where I feel locked down or kind of possessed in any way is very unattractive to me. And I think that when you're secure enough in yourself and the other person is secure enough, you can, you know, you can live your own lives and still just want to be with that one person.
I like to keep my pizza in a cage in the basement with no windows and the water occasionally. I'll just let him. Have you ever been in a, it's so funny.
In a cage with a pizza?
But there is just a stand-up twice. Stage in that room with the cage.
That's right. I'm going to make it listening to my jokes before I have sex with it.
Hey, I know you're trapped, but if I could just run this new file, I got a couple of things. Just
want to workshop this.
No, don't pass out. I'll feed you after.
I can't bounce jokes off you if you're crying.
I'll feed you after with yourself.
I'll feed you after with yourself.
Have you guys done that great alt show in Chris's basement?
It's so good. Oh, yeah. The pizza pit?
Oh, you mean cage laughs? Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's really good. Oh, we both went for similar jokes.
Yeah, that's what your friends.
That's what we do. Well, this is what all comics do. It's just have you ever dated a comic or hung out with comedians before?
Yeah, I've hung out with a lot of comedians. I've hung out with a lot of my friends are Irish, so they're all like funny as fuck. Can I say fuck?
Yes, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of pretty silly people in my life. I don't know. My parents are always kind of, they were so surprised, I think, when I went into acting, but then so delighted because I could never give anybody a straight answer on anything. So I think they kind of, you know, it's just kind of a goof. And I don't know. I've never seriously dated a comic. Ha ha ha.
Well, it is serious business dating a comic. Everyone thinks, oh, comics are all fun, but, you know, but we're sort of, we're dark and brooding and we analyze everything and, you know.
Yes, they think outside the box and they do all this analysis to actually, you know, make a commentary on life. That's comedy.
I think we suck to date.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, I think we're awful to date.
Horribly sensitive, narcissistic. It's a rough, I don't wish it upon anyone.
I don't know. I kind of like horribly sensitive narcissists.
Do you really? Oh, that's sweet. Have you ever, so you've obviously been in relationships where like the guy was super possessive, but it's just so funny sometimes to be in a relationship where you're used to being one thing and then like something flips. You must have had someone who just got so under your skin and then you're like, what am I doing? Does that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really funny, and you know, when you meet a lot of different people, and you're an actor, and you kind of go into different environments all the time. I kind of have I think I'm very sort of what's the way of putting this? I just like to be myself around someone very quickly, and so I sort of expect that that's what they're showing too. And so sometimes you get a sense of like you really think you've gotten to know somebody just you know intellectually and everything, and then you sort of. And you move around a lot, and so you just kind of want to know someone. And this is no secret. I'm sure this is why a lot of actors have trouble sort of maintaining relationships and finding it, because you want to be close, you want to know someone really well, and have sort of a close bond. But you then you know a month later you're moving and stuff like this. So it's difficult, and it's interesting, and that's why I say finding somebody who sort of lets you be yourself, and I think that that's something that really sustains a good, lasting relationship, and them being comfortable enough with all the sort of travel and all the stuff that you have to do to maintain this public life, but know that that's not all you.
Well, I think I think there are deeper things even than that, because I mean, just on a human level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a performer, if you're a comedian, or if you're traveling a lot, you know, human beings are, you know, I think you know, one of the reasons why we've ascended to the top of the food chain is we're very adaptable creatures.
Mm.
But what that means is that when you're constantly in different environments, you're constantly changing and adapting to those environments, because you don't have like one stable place that you're always in. So I think that causes you to be a little all over the map with who you are and constantly changing. And then on top of that, if you're an actor, you really are submerging yourself into all of these random emotions that most people don't experience. And that fucking, like, it's like you're just like a paddle game.
Yes, it's so true. And you're so, I mean, you're so used to being that in touch with your emotions. It's very difficult to hide how you feel sometimes, too.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, especially doing this show at the moment, it's very much like that. And you're kind of like, you know, you feel kind of raw.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's good, but I think it's interesting. It's like you say about the comics. I think it takes a really strong person to be with an actor and an entertainer, and you know, it's a lucky person, and it's a strong person.
So because of that, do you think it's better to date another actor who understands, but also probably has a lot of the same weaknesses, or do you feel like it's better to date someone who's a little more opposite, but maybe doesn't understand the process?
Yeah, it's I almost said the two-part question again, which is the A and the B, which is the question.
Okay.
No, but it's something I've definitely been trying to figure out. So I'd have to say somebody who gets your sense of humor kind of overcomes all of that, because at the end of the day, I just want to come home and just be with someone who gets me and just like, you know, and have a hug. Because if they get you, then they get everything that you've been through, and it doesn't matter what they do. And it doesn't matter if they, you know, they're a music teacher or they're a comedian or they're a, you know, an actor themselves, and just somebody, I don't know, somebody with a really good heart and a really good sense of humor, I think.
Yeah.
It's like the only rule. The only rule. Yeah.
And also that they're not a murderer.
And yeah, no, well.
Well, I guess that's the good heart thing.
Well, yeah, well. You can work with it, work around it.
I guess, you know.
If they're hilarious and only kind of a murderer.
A hilarious murderer. Yeah. Like a cross between Louis and Dexter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which we should start working on.
Actually, I don't know if Louis would be fun to be in a relationship with. He's a little, he seems dark.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that trick was, I think Louis killed somebody.
What? I'm sorry. And then you're just like, oh, you lovable scamp. I'll help you bury the body. Do you feel like you have a good sense of who you are at this point in your life, or do you feel like you're still kind of working it out?
Yeah, good question. I feel like you know, I kind of feel pretty good about where I am right now. What the more I do work that really means something to me, the more I realize that your life and who you are is just what you do, and it's like it's just how I approach situations and how I build relationships and doing this show and the opportunities that are coming to my life right now bring a lot of people that I'm interested in engaging with and a lot of people that are like-minded, and that has just settled me so much. So much at the beginning of your career is sometimes making compromises on the work you're doing or the places you're living or the people that you're separated from, be they your friends or family or something. And now I just feel so kind of so honest about that, and it's sort of, it's been kind of like a radiation into the rest of my life, which has been good. So we're never fully sure, I suppose, and I love that.
But there are definitely are times in your life where you kind of just go, fuck, I don't know what I want, or I don't know what I feel, or I don't know
what I want. I never know.
What do you think that, what do you have some guesses?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely just like working with kids and painting the inside of houses. Like, these are two things I know.
Like painting walls or like doing like art paintings?
Art as well, but I love demolition and I love getting messy and I love, you know, wearing the same clothes for 3 days. Like, these are things I'm sure of. So if I start with that, then I can kind of, but yeah, I mean, if I can do good work and I can play the piano and I can, you know, hang out with people that are fun and funny, then I think I'm kind of, that's my touchstone. And I know it's just kind of.
So it sounds like what we should try to help you do is take over a building and you can be involved in the process of turning it into an orphanage. Where you can paint the walls. But then one of the floor has a bar on it. So yeah. With an old timey piano.
Yeah, like a plinkety plunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then you know, that'd be a really great idea is you get people to come into your bar, mm-hmm. get them a little buzzed, and then the next room, they adopt kids. Because they're a little buzzed. Oh, that's so cute. We can take care of a kid. Fucking come on.
Kids are for life, not just for Christmas.
This is why we don't go to the orphan bar anymore.
It says right in the...
Also, can I run a comedy show at your orphan bar?
You know, it's like when you go to a strip club, because I do that all the time.
Atlanta has notoriously famous strip clubs. The Claremont. With there's like an 80-year-old stripper there. The Claremont, yeah, in Atlanta.
Yeah, Precious. I can't remember her name, actually, but she's amazing. And you know they all love Scott Wilson.
Oh, of course.
They love Scott Wilson. So we go in there and we go, because it's actually just it's a place that, you know, is open until late that everybody can kind of feel relaxed in.
Yeah.
So we go there and they all kind of.
What,
of course,
other options didn't work that you got to that? How many Denny's were how bad?
Well, a Denny's is fine, but it doesn't have a pole with an old lady on a rascal spinning around it. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, no, you're right. No, you're right. I'm so sorry. What was I thinking? Of course it has those things.
How do you take your eggs?
Elderly?
Boiled. Yeah. So no, we obviously didn't try very hard to find essential staff entrance.
Is it directly in front of the exit to where you shoot?
Yeah, it's like, and that's a wrap.
Let's just cross that street.
The prison was built off of the Claremont. So that some of the zombies are not even made up. They're just people who are dancing at the Claremont.
Weirdly high number of stripper zombies this season. It seems like a weird misnomer. All makes sense now.
They're all in sequin bikinis.
That, now I get it.
Yeah.
Now I get it. It's just like they just see the bicycle girl in a bikini top. It's like crawling on a stage.
A legless stripper.
Yeah, just a leg. Yeah. The Claremont's a really interesting place. So, oh my God. So we totally have to make like a zombie stripper club. I think there's enough people. It's rule 34. First of all, I guarantee you there are already websites about that. I have seen like zombie swimsuit calendars. your mouth is quite agape. I didn't say I purchased them. I just have been online. I've been on the internet and I've seen.
That was an excited agape too. Like, where do I get this?
That was a horrified.
Were they like, in your Amazon we recommend?
Why does it keep telling me to buy this? Well, I guess Amazon knows me better than I do. Right again, Amazon. Right again.
Ding.
Listen, the algorithms on those suggestion engines really dig into your being. Like they you don't pay attention to what you're looking at and buying all the time, and then it's not until someone puts it on a little plate and says, "Just by the way, here's what you like."
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I.
And then also adds maybe a Kindle too.
Of course, you're not a Kindle.
Buy stripper zombies on Kindle.
What are you? Do you play piano? Are you a pianist?
I do. I play piano. I've played actually since I was very small. So it's been great being back in Atlanta because I've had a stable place for a while to rent a piano and brush up and I sing, and it's been really nice to sort of return to that. So
what kind of music?
Everything. Jazz standards, blues, soul. I mean, Nina Simone is one of my favorite, and Ella. Nice. You know, I obviously wish I was black.
We all?
Yeah, right.
Me too.
But
for a lot of reasons. Pizza reasons.
Oh, pizza. Oh, you big pizza.
You're just a big pizza.
So everything. Emily and I actually did a song for the soundtrack.
What?
I know. It's great. We had this little song around the campfire.
That song. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, and the music supervisor asked us to come in and do kind of the full version and stuff in the studio. So it was really fun. We went to Sugarland Studio in Atlanta. I mean, it's the first time I've been in a recording studio like this. I was nervous as hell. Like, it was so funny. And you just sort of, like, you have your headphones and you're in front of all these people and you
that
have to
talking through the window.
Yes.
You see it and everything, and then you're there and you're just like, oh man, this is real.
Do you know what would be really fun? We should make a video of like of like imagine you're watching a commercial for an album just on cable television tonight. It's basically Maggie's greatest hits. And it's just like all of these ridiculous songs that she's written about the apocalypse. Just like a song about Glenn. And it's, you know, like an Eats Meets West kind of a song. Yeah. Like song about farms. I don't know. Just whatever would
the
be.
The world is over and my boyfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's all really like good down in country.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a little upbeat, but it's just about all this horrible, you know, like.
And then you have these great, like, celebratory riffs in the song, and like, and all these zombies are in the back, like, you know, clicking their fingers and this kind of.
Just a song about Sophia in the vein of Landslide. It's going to be really fun. Like, I think we have to do. I think
the tagline is the last album ever made might also be the best.
This is the only thing you can listen to, but it's number one.
Cross genres.
Number one for 71 straight weeks.
Number one in album sales by someone finding one.
That's right. That's a really good idea. I think that's a really good idea. Oh man, that'd be so much fun. Listen, if you're back, when you come back sometime, we'll have to shoot that.
Yeah, we'll make a video. It's a great idea.
Because then you just get to write a bunch of silly songs about prisons and zombie apocalypse, but just all from the point of view of this like kind of tough as nails but sunny country girl.
You know what we could do? We could have I could be playing a guitar and then I could pull the machete out from like, there could be a sheath on the guitar and then the zombies are kind of there and it's like the slash and
that's an awesome idea. Or you like you whack off the head, whack off.
Oh god. Okay, Jesus Christ. I'm so sorry.
You lop off the
skull.
You lop off the head. The delicious throbbing head of the zombie who's at the piano.
I think the
very end of the video too needs to be that it's produced by Zombie Jack White.
Or Rob Zombie.
That works too.
Yeah.
Who's just alive.
No, it's just my name. I'm not a goddamn zombie. God damn it. Have you played like in public professionally? Have you performed?
No, I've done. When I was younger, I did sort of like musicals and all this stuff all through school, and then I did some stuff for like hip hop and garage music. You know, you have sort of loops, and it's interesting. Singing is the thing that gives me the most pleasure, and it gives me the most nerves. So it's something that I've kind of always enjoyed doing, but not live performing. I mean, it scared me, but now I think I'm ready to not be scared anymore.
Oh, that's so adorable. A bunch of guys just went, "Aww, I'll help you, Lauren Cohen, cause I'm a faithful dog." Yeah. Just wants to be your buddy.
Well, it'll be like a sister act.
It just like sister act. Just like, do you want to do like Broadway again? Do you ever
Broadway. I mean, I love show tunes. Like, you meet my singing teacher. She would have no idea that I'm like shy about singing in front of people because it's just. But yeah, everything.
Do you sing properly? Do you sing?
It's real singing.
I mean, do you sing properly? Like from the like, because I blow out my voice really easily.
Yeah, it's easy to do. You can kind of push there on the front of your throat, or you can kind of. I think once you find that it actually drops in like to this part of you, it's a lot of support from here, and then one day you just stop thinking about the technique, and it's just sort of the way that I like to think about it is that it's like yoga. You know what I mean? It's like you're not taking your energy from your diaphragm. You're not taking it from from your knees or the ground. You're taking it from all the way from the bottom of the earth, and the more you can kind of relax and let it through you, then you're really doing justice to it, because like acting, like everything, you're just a conduit.
Whoa. Oh my god,
really deep.
After all the pizza dick jokes, it just got like we just like learned a lesson. That's really nice.
Yeah.
I hope you start performing. I really think, you know, especially around Atlanta, there must be a million places you could just go up and do, because there's a whole different learning curve. Because I have played instruments in front of people, and there's a whole different learning curve between, oh, I totally did this at home, but then when you get on stage, it's like I forgot how everything works. You know,
totally.
you have to fuck up a little bit to then and then you're sure. Then you're okay.
Yeah, yeah, and you sort of have to just work through the nerves. It's like, I don't know. Anytime I'm truly nervous or embarrassed, or anytime I've finished a scene or finished anything where I kind of feel exposed afterwards, like we have stuff coming up that's like that, I was like, oh, I just did that in front of my crew, or I just, whatever it is in the show, and I'm like, that's when you know it's good, because you're supposed to be having kind of the most, you know, real moments in front of other people.
But what's interesting about like comedy or acting or singing or anything is that I think we have this idea in our heads that, you know, we're supposed to be doing something, like something is supposed to happen. And so sometimes when you sort of, it's sort of, I guess what people refer to as the zone, but when you get into the zone, that's gone. And then afterwards, it's almost not satisfying, because you go, well, I didn't do anything. And then people go, it was great. You go, yeah, but it didn't feel like anything.
Isn't that so funny? It's like when you leave an audition and you have that thrilling kind of feeling, and you think you feel convinced you booked it, and then you're the true fail. And then when you do something and you forgot what happened in the room, and that's when you did it right.
Or when you're doing scenes and it's just like, especially with, I don't think any acting class can really prepare people for. Or maybe some can. I shouldn't say that. I'm sure people will give me 50 examples of how I'm wrong. But who's been burned by the internet, guys? Who's that? Who's like a dog who just shuts his eyes every time he opens his mouth? Like, please don't smack me.
That's @Nerdist at Twitter.
Fucking shut up. What was I saying?
Acting class can kind of.
Yeah, acting class. Yeah. Can't prepare you for. You're on a set. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. You've been waiting for 4 hours, and then they set up the cameras, and it's like, okay, you got to go right now. And then you might get a couple chances at it, and then you got to move on.
It's so true. And that's the funniest thing about acting is that we're all amazing actors when there's no camera on us. And sure. And that's kind of what the consolation we give ourselves within the cast of this is like, you know what? If I do it right and if I do a great job and I'm doing it for my castmates, then that's amazing. Because the biggest challenge is being real when you have a camera right there. And sometimes the best shots are when the camera's the best shots within the show. You get to see into the viewpoint of the character, and the camera has to be right there up by your eye. And that's when it's most challenging to forget that you're in this environment. But like, I just loved Javier Bardem in Beautiful because you knew that he had this camera in his face the entire time, and he was completely... It was invisible to him the whole time, and that's what really I think makes a good actor is somebody that can just forget that anything else in there is there and just be there.
But you can be doing your job, and then they can go, "Oh, cut, sorry," and you're like, "Fuck, I just, oh."
Yeah, I was just getting there. Or if there's a hair in the gate, and that's one of the most challenging things is you've gone through the scene and you know you got it, and then. And then, there's a technical difficulty or there's a, that's why with film especially, it's interesting. You're picking up at different times in the story all the time and trying to just sort of track where your character is at and then hoping that none of the other variables are working against you, be it, something gets lost or there's something that's not within the continuity that doesn't work. So they have to choose the scenes based on this, that, or the other. But you just hope that... If you're just a little bit better every day, then that's, I guess, the success of it.
That's the goal, to get a little bit better every day. And then beyond that, it's not even in your control. Like, I feel bad sometimes when people, if someone gets written off as like, "Oh, that person was a bad actor." And like, yeah, but how do you know that was the best take? Maybe the director or the editor just used a shitty take because the lighting was better.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. There is just like... And it's so interesting because sometimes it'll be, I don't know. I mean, that's why everybody's working so hard to keep your eye lines consistent and your hair has to be tucked the same way. You move your head and you have one thing that's out of place and it completely takes people out of the story because they can see that this is happening. And sometimes it's left by the wayside because you just can't sacrifice a performance. But you have the whole fabric, the whole tapestry and the greater good to keep in mind. So, yeah, you just as an actor, as everybody, you're always bringing your best game to every single take. And that's been for me, I really miss doing theater, but doing television is such a way to crystallize your own approach and your own talent because you just like, you don't have the luxury of living through that same story finished end start to end every night because I start at the end and so you really do get the satisfaction of blah 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 blah.
Are you making fun of yourself?
I am.
Why?
Because I just started to want to
you started to say really meaningful and interesting
I think
things.
It's really true, though. Like, it is weird going from theater to acting on film because it is weird because you have to live in that single moment and you're doing it so many times that it's weird. You have those sort of emotional breakthroughs three takes in, and then you have that, like, shit, they shot my coverage first. But
exactly. And it's the polite thing to do to shoot the ladies first, but oftentimes you'll get asked and stuff like this, but yeah. It's also you get these, it's all good. I was going to say you get script changes sometimes at the last minute and you're really figuring it out. The whole team of you are sometimes figuring it out on the fly, but that freshness also really works and not having a chance to overanalyze things can be really beneficial to the scene. And
so I think it's really kind of interesting. I think television can be better for actors in the sense that, if you work on something for a few seasons, like once you know where that place is that your character lives, then they can just hand you something and you can just spit it out. If you're working on a movie, it's like, okay, you got a couple months.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
Now.
And you create that character for the movie and you... Yeah, exactly.
And then
we know
sort
each
of discard it once it's done. By the time you've gotten it, like, all right, I am in this. They're like, all right, camp's over.
Yeah. It is camp, isn't it? Yeah. movie camp.
Do you want to do? Do you think film might be in your future? Maybe is that what you want to do? Or you want to do more tele? You probably just want to do whatever sounds fun.
Yeah, I really want to do everything. I mean, I just want to. The thing I love about film is that you get to go to a completely new place oftentimes and meet new people. And some of the greatest friends I've ever made have been on location of doing a movie. And it's just like, you know, the movie may never come out. The movie may be a pile of shit, but you have made some of the best friendships because you have this holiday romance with the crew and everybody that you meet. So, and it's just fun for me to dive into something new. Walking Dead's been a whole new stability actually, with how long it runs and this, but I just want to do, you do one character for a long time and you almost forget how many different types of people there are and how many different things you can play. And as I'm now coming out of the season and looking at what I'm going to do on the hiatus, I'm just really psyched to do that. And yeah.
You have that really charming sort of Kate Blanchett thing, just the way that you speak. It's like, it's sweet, but it's articulate. And you say bean and gay Raj, and it just sounds so... It's so great. American ears love that. Oh, it's so great. I don't know. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, I don't know. It's sweet and charming, but classy. And I don't like to use the word classy because usually when you use it, it means the opposite. You're like, this is a classy joint. You're like, oh, so you mean it's the opposite of a classy joint.
Come on.
Now the question is, would Mickey. Chris like the Claremont more if everyone were English?
Maybe I would. Oh, if I, listen.
Just an 80-year-old stripper, but she's like a nice English nanny.
I would watch Judi Dench take her clothes. I would watch Judi Dench strip. I would. At a class, at a, I would. I would. If you know, especially if she was talking.
As M. As and you were James Bond.
Nerdist fans, if you're going to build a soundboard, if just for me you could put, I would watch Judi Dench strip somewhere in the Chris Hardwick soundboard.
There's already a soundboard. Someone will put it in there.
Update that.
Somewhere.
Because that's a good line.
Here, I'll even make it a better sign. But take it off, Judi Dench. There's a tuppence in it for you. There.
Tuppence actually is funny because there was when I was a kid, I'm much older than my siblings and I used to babysit my siblings and I always used to sing them songs, you know, when they were kind of in their cot and stuff like this. And my parents came home once and I was famous for getting the words and sounds, the words and songs wrong, ironically. And I thought that Mary Poppins was singing Feed the Birds Tuppings of Eggs. And my parents came home from a dinner party and they were in the living room and the monitor was on downstairs and I was really going for it, you know, obviously not lulling these babies to sleep. And but it was that and, you know, misappropriating everything to salad dressing too. It was like those and Islands was what I called Thousand Island.
Those and Islands.
It's always when you pluck up the courage to ask it to be passed to you and you're like, could you please pass me the those and Islands? Those and other islands.
So we're gonna go to the Canary Islands. We're, you hopefully you were not like 22 at the time, right? This was you were a child, I assume.
Should not have drank tea.
I'm sorry, I don't know how. I've just never heard it said aloud. It's not my fault.
Yeah, except I was so tiny, it was my Jersey accent still. So can you please pass those in islands?
So, we have to move to a different country to try to fix this. That's why your parents moved. I know we told you it was for work reasons. We were just trying to smooth out your pronunciations of words.
Salad dressings.
We're sort of at the end of our hour with you, which is a bummer because you're fun. Aww. But I would love to, I feel like the best way to end this podcast would be to have you singing your version of Tuppence. With all of the wrong lyrics,
oh,
if you
yeah.
can remember
okay.
it.
Well, I'll do it in my American accent.
Okay, then. Okay.
Feed the birds tuppings of eggs. Maybe that was how I did it when I was very small. I don't know. This is incredibly embarrassing. I've gone.
You have to do it. You
yeah.
have to do it.
I'm too red for radio.
No, you're not. You're
no,
fine.
I did it.
These
good.
Girls are too red for radio. You won't believe how far they're willing to go.
They're red for never mind.
Top.
Quiet time now.
I am a small child and I need to be lulled into a slumber by my older sister who has a song. Why are you making, you want me to cut your head off? Why are you making this hand motion? Are you choking? Mom! She's not doing it!
Leave the birds!
Go to bed!
How many toppings do I need to give these birds? How many toppings do I need to give these birds?
Toppings.
It'd be funny if you just got up and left, like, fuck it, I'm not doing it. Oh, no!
No!
Lauren, go in!
Oh, she's gone.
It's like I can still feel her in the room.
She's gone, Chris. Don't worry.
Her aura is alive. I can still hear her. I can still hear her giggle on the wind.
I feel like pizza in a cage.
You're gonna laugh so I can get horny. Come on.
That's not.
Show
not
me
a
your
quote
cheese.
A comic has said it.
Show
some
me
point.
Your cheese. Show me your. I got some sausage for that pizza. Shut up. You sure do talk back a lot for a pizza. I don't know why I go into that accent all the time. It's because I grew up in the South. That's why.
Did you?
I did.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm Tennessean.
Oh, Tunisian.
Adorable! Stop it! Adorable! All right, well, hopefully you'll come back on the podcast someday.
I'll sing when I come back.
Okay, good. You'll prepare a song. Oh, we have to shoot Maggie's Greatest Hits at some point when you're back.
Yeah, that'll be really fun.
And you are on Twitter. Is it Lauren Cohen?
Lauren Cohen.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Lauren Cohen. It's not Lauren Cohen. I know. I'm sure you fucking get that all the time from people.
I even say it half the time. So it's like
Lauren Cohen.
Yeah. I think I say the Cohen so people know it's an A because there's a lot of the ENs and it gets confusing. So, but I don't know. All my swimming trophies when I was a kid were spelled with an E. I think it went into my brain from age 4. My name is Lauren.
You were
Cohen.
Actually just taking trophies from some other girl.
There's some poor little Jewish girl who didn't get her
Someone
swimming trophies.
Someone in New Jersey who's just bummed and could have been a swimmer. Gave it all up.
For everything. Because you took her trophies.
She's just polishing her own hand.
And Lauren Cohen actually has the award for not pronouncing words correctly that was supposed to go to Lauren Cohen. The Island Award for Achievement.
Bottle of those and Island.
It's the Island Achievement Award. Goes to Lauren Cohen.
And if it makes it any better, every trophy was most improved swimmer. I'll let you take from that what you will. Used to stand outside the pool, now is in the water.
Here's a trophy. Okay, your feet got off the floor of the pool for a second. Here's another trophy.
Yeah.
Lauren Cohen, you are endlessly delightful. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Chris.
It's good to see you. I'm coming to the set soon, so I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Woo! Bye.
Woo! Toppings. Toppings.
Toppings of herbs.
Oh, my goodness.
Sir. We're going to finish podcast talk Alexis now.
What's the other one? Oh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
You got that right, but you didn't get tuppence right?
I know.
You serious?
But when you're in New Jersey, you don't know what tuppence are.
No.
But there are supercalifragilistics running down the sidewalk.
They love it. Hey, look at this fucking expialidocious piece of shit over here. Huh? Even the sound of him's kind of atrocious.
What kind of hoagie you having? Go Eagles!
It's a pizza hoagie.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.